Radio Leeds interviewing the nuns of Woodhall Carmel. And the first nun to be interviewed is Mari, who was still then using the name Sister Elizabeth.
Not off from the outside world. The Carmelite nuns at Woodhall in Wetherby live a secluded life, dedicated to the worship of God, shunning the rigours of the world beyond the monastery's perimeter. In this exclusive documentary, the nuns of Woodhall talk openly about their beliefs. Our reporter, Philippa Busby, is the first person ever to enter their monastery and witness their daily ritual.
It's 5:30 in the morning and the day has begun at the Carmel Monastery at Woodhall. The clapper sounds the reveille, and in the cold darkness of winter, 13 nuns rise from their beds and make their way along silent corridors to the chapel to make their devotions. Theirs is a life of dedication and commitment to God, a life of silent prayer. Their world runs on its own timescale, at odds with the rhythms of life beyond the monastery's perimeters. The Carmelite order is a closed order. The nuns don't teach or nurse. Instead, they devote their lives to constant prayer in the privacy of their community, never leaving the monastery's grounds and speaking only when necessary. Communication with the outside world is rare indeed. The day begins in the small and simple chapel with early morning prayer. The bell marks the stages of the day, and at 6:15 it sounds for breakfast. A simple meal of bread with margarine and tea. Each nun takes her place on a bench in the refectory. Sister Elizabeth helps with the preparations. Her thoughts of becoming a nun came at a very early age.
When I was a very little girl, it began. When I was 8 years old, I had a book given to me, which was The Life of St. Therese of the Charities of Lisieux. And I thought, oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up. But then, as little girls do, they change, and then they want to be a ballet dancer, and then they want to be a nurse, and then they want to be a farmer's wife, and then they want to fly. And in between, I always wanted to be a writer. I must write, and I should be a famous authoress. But as the years went by, I forgot about the Carmelite monastery for a bit. But once in a while, I would remember. And then, when I began to get to be about 16 or 17, the idea began to niggle.
Her parents let her leave home to spend a year at a convent school in Glastonbury, and a year later she visited the prioress of a Carmelite monastery and decided to join.
I loved my family, and I was the eldest, and we were a very close family, and I couldn't bear to tell them I was going to leave them. So I stayed at home for a while, and I talked with the sisters for a couple of years. And then when I was 22... after many thinkings and agonizings, I slipped away. I eloped, as you might say. I didn't tell my parents. I couldn't tell them I was going away forever, and they'd see me going down the road and know I was never coming back. And so I slipped away. So I'm just going to go down and see the Reverend Mother. Because I had done that before. I'd made a visit to the Carmel. Didn't say when I was coming back. And, of course, I never went back. It was, in a way, a cruel way. But I felt that the pain that they would have seeing me go would have been so terrible for them. I don't know. I perhaps did wrong.
The autumn rain covers it with blessings. They make it a place of spring.
My dear little brother was only 4, and one day he handed a note, a piece of paper. He's learning to write, and he handed a note to my sister, and I opened it, and it was writing in all one, like the tiny children do. Dear Mari, I want you to come home sometime in September. Well, that nearly broke my vocation, but I thought, when he is so little, he will forget quite soon, which he did.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth.
I love God so much that he's always been my love. And I love everybody else's children. I love children still just as much as I ever did. And if any come to see us, it's lovely. And I keep up with my family, and they all have, you know, children of their own now. I think that's how it is. When you do love somebody desperately, you can't imagine yourself loving anybody else anyway. I mean, you love everybody more. Any love creates more love, doesn't it? In anybody's life, presumably.
Breakfast is followed at 6:45 by an hour of silent personal prayer. Each nun returns to herself for quiet contemplation. The order has its roots in the monastic tradition of hermits who inhabited the caves of Mount Carmel in the 13th century. The nuns follow the teachings of St. Teresa. Each cell is sparsely furnished with a bed and a small desk. A big black cross adorns the walls, and there's a single coat hanger behind the door for the habit. At 8 o'clock, the nuns return to their pews in the chapel for the main service of the day, Mass. A priest comes to lead the service, and the nuns form a circle to receive the Holy Communion. It's the most important part of the day, and for the first time, the singing is accompanied.
All this is water and flour. And it's the principle is that it's like a biscuit making outfit. That's just, you can see.
At 9 o'clock, the day's work begins. Sister Paddy is making the altar breads used in the Holy Communion. She pours the paste onto two hot plates, where it cooks and bubbles for a few minutes before drying into a thin disc. Later, the breads have to be dampened so they can be cut into shape.
We cook the called brown breads. Most in this country, most people would cook white breads. And they're thicker than normal, and they're browner, as you can see. This is a lovely thing to know that bread is actually going to be used at Mass. And this is another presence of the Lord in the world through this piece of bread when it's consecrated, and then it's distributed to people, you see. So it is a way of being, it was active in the body of Christ within our vocation.
Sister Paddy was 27 and an agricultural researcher in Edinburgh when she decided to become a nun. It was 1960, and she felt God had been calling her since she was 18. Her decision shocked her friends.
Oh, they thought I was mad, of course. They thought, how will Paddy ever survive in a quiet order?
Were you always a bit of a chatterbox?
Well, they thought so, I didn't realise it. They thought I wouldn't survive, I suppose, really, that's it. They thought it was so alien to the person they thought I was, or the person they knew me to be.
As we cook the incarnation of Christ, thy Son, what's made known by the message?
To me, you're alone with the Lord. You're never alone without a person, as it were. And I'm not being pious, you know, in saying that he's consciously there and you talk to him. But when you're with people, you're with people and you're communicating with people. But when you're alone, as you say, in the quiet moments within our vocation, you're alone with the Lord.
Have 2,200 of the people's breads and 30 of the priest's size bread, and that goes out to this particular church.
Where's that one going?
It's going to Leeds, as a matter of fact, Leeds Cathedral.
The orders are packed by Sister Joan Elizabeth and are sent out to congregations throughout the country. It's a small business and provides the nuns with money for any necessities. Toothpaste, cloth, and tools for the garden, which are delivered to the monastery.
There's a tremendous thrill in sending out what is going to become the bread of life to the north of Scotland and to Cornwall and all stations in between. And it's a thrill. It's thrilling. Each one I pack up, each order I pack up, it gives me a thrill. I love it.
Sister Joan Elizabeth is the only nun at Woodhall allowed to deal with people outside the monastery. She's the nun's contact point with the outside world. The nuns also run their own printing press, making letterheads for their personal use and simple greeting cards which are sold outside the monastery. Sister Melanie's been working the press throughout the 21 years she's been a nun. She says the life of a nun isn't always an easy life, but one which takes work and dedication.
I remember once saying to someone that we find ourselves living here with people that outside we probably spend quite a lot of time avoiding, really. But it's good, because that's what sort of brings a challenge, you know. And, you know, you realise they need loving just as much as anybody else. And probably how you feel about someone else is feeling about you, you know. So it's quite sort of humiliating, really.
Past 11, the nuns return to the chapel for divine office. Then at 11:30, it's time for dinner. each returns silently to her bench in the refectory.
And where are the debaters of this age? Do you not see how God has shown up human wisdom as fully?
The food is brought to each nun where she sits, and plate by plate removed when she's finished. It's a simple meal of homegrown vegetables from the monastery's garden. One of the sisters reads to the others from a lectern. After dinner, the work begins again. The monastery takes its own novices. Sister Pauline will make her final vows this year, and until then she wears a white veil instead of the full brown habit. She's taken on the responsibility of the vegetable garden, which supplies the kitchen with most of its food. The monastery is set in its own wooded grounds where the nuns can retreat for a breath of air and for quiet contemplation. Sister Pauline, at 31, is the youngest of the nuns. She became a Catholic when she was 21 and a student at Leeds University.
I was reading English literature. You have to read a lot of religious poetry and religious writings, and I'm losing my breath. And I find it all very interesting because I'd had no religious upbringing at all, so I suppose I had no prejudices or anything. And I suppose also I sang in a choir and we sang a lot of religious music and masses and things like that. And one thing that had a deep effect on me was I went to a performance of Bach's St. Matthew Passion in Newcastle Cathedral. And it just occurred to me that religion, this, you know, what I had seen of religion had something to tell me about human nature and the deep truths of what it is to be alive and what sort of creatures we are.
At a time when many young women are making a career for themselves or having children, Sister Pauline will take the last step towards a life committed to poverty, chastity and obedience.
I think deciding never to get married and have children, especially having children, I always wanted to have children when I was younger. And I think it is quite a big thing for a woman because it's built into you physically, you know. But the thing is, you can't do everything with life. I mean, whatever you choose to do, you're choosing not to do hundreds of other things. And I suppose for me, God just became so real and so important that I wanted to give my whole life to him. I mean, I don't do it very well, you know, it sounds wonderful. But that's what I really want, sort of deep down, you know.
You're walking through some really beautiful countryside here.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you like to come here in your quieter moments?
Yes, I often come out into the woods. I like to go for a walk.
There's another new member to the order at Wood Hall. Sister Josie is a postulant. That means she hasn't yet been clothed in the habit. She's only been in this monastery about 5 months, although she decided to dedicate herself to religious life 10 years ago. In doing so, she gave up a career as a midwife. But she doesn't believe she's missed out by not having children of her own.
I've got 21 nieces and nephews, and I've had great pleasure from being an auntie. Oddly enough, I don't ever feel that I've lost out for not being a mother. I suppose I would never have thought of motherhood without you give birth to a child in a family situation. You have a husband, you want to give birth to his child. I've never actually been in that situation where I thought I want to spend my life with this man and give birth to his children.
Sister Josie had been a nun with the Order of the Sisters of St. Clair, but it had been an unhappy and difficult time for her.
I found it a struggle to follow the spirituality of St. Francis. I didn't really know Francis or Claire in the way that I feel as though I can identify and know Teresa.
Sister Josie will soon take the habit for the second time.
Here, I've worn my own clothes all the time, and it's very much more of a putting aside of your previous life, to go from your own clothes, deciding what you're wearing in the morning, to putting a habit on.
And what'll happen to the clothes you're wearing today?
Well, I can tell you what happened to them last time I put them aside. My sisters used to visit me looking very smart, because I had smarter clothes then. But right now, I mean, I don't know. We have in the cabin there, you know, all sorts of wonderful dressing up gear for players and things. Some of them may end up there, and I dare say some of them will end up being worn by my sisters again.
At 1:45, the nuns return to their cells for private spiritual reading. Once again, the corridors are still and silent. The nuns used to use sign language to communicate, and they still maintain a dedication to quiet which dominates their lives, speaking only to each other when necessary or during the evening period of recreation. At 3:00, they return to work. In the robe room, Sister Kathleen is making a new habit for Sister Josie's clothing ceremony.
It's my job to set her up in it. The habit is what we wear, our dress, outer dress. It's a sign of dedication of our life. So at the moment I've got the main body of the habit put together, and I'm just about to put the pocket in, which is always a bit of a nerve-wracking job.
Sister Kathleen joined the Carmelites nearly 50 years ago, just after the war.
For me it was a flash, and I was about 17, and I hadn't thought of Carmel particularly, but I realised that God was calling me to this, away from everything, just to belong totally to him. And, well, there was no question my doing anything about it then, because I was nearly the eldest of a large family, and in those days, well, it's getting as bad now, isn't it? There weren't so many helps towards education and so on, and so I knew I couldn't do anything about entering until the youngest one was settled. Well, the youngest one, by the time I was 25, the youngest one had got a scholarship to Manchester University, so then I felt free.
Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread.
I fell in love, and it was absolutely marvellous, you know, and so on. And I thought, oh, I can't possibly be a nun. And I thought, well, of course, God couldn't possibly have asked me to be a nun if this could happen. Anyway, I had a very wise friend who was about 2 or 3 years older than myself, another student. So I took her for a long walk. And, you know, we shared the same religious convictions. And I said this to her. So she said to me, well, of course, it may be, Kathleen, that this is it, you know, and I'll help you to get to know Jim better and so on. She said, but it may be that God wants you to know this and is asking you for himself alone and wants you to know what it is, if you follow him, that you're being asked to give, and also to understand what it's like. In fact, she was a very wise woman. So then I tried to get out of it a bit further, because this boy was not a Catholic, and in those days, well, now it's difficult, but in those days especially, it was a bit frowned on, you see. So there was this particularly holy priest who used to come to us, and again, so I went to him and I said, I thought it in my mind, you know, I was in love, if you like, but I knew this wasn't going to be the last love of my life, sort of thing. And I thought to myself, well, I could tell him about this, and that I had this boyfriend, but of course he wasn't a Catholic, so perhaps I ought to let him go. And my idea was he would say, oh yes, certainly, and then I'd be quite free, you know, for any other one that came along. So very cunning, you know. So anyway, I went to him and I said, told him all this, and he said, oh no, he said, now you could help that young man very much, and so on and so forth. So there I was, and you had to give up this young man and every other young man.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
When I'd been in Carmel perhaps 3 or 4 years, my brother for a time, one of my brothers, came to live quite near. He'd just been married, and his wife was a very delightful girl, and she was expecting her first baby, and they used to come and see me regularly. And I felt it terribly then. I felt, oh, how much I would love to have a baby. But I knew this was all part of what was asked of me. And again, there's a kind of motherhood. I mean, we remain women, don't we? And there's a motherhood in our life towards other people and towards the world.
The sewing of a habit for the new member reminds the other nuns of when they were clothed. Sister Joan Elizabeth.
It felt absolutely wonderful. At that time, I would definitely have said it was the happiest day of my life. But there have been happier since, because I've since gone on and made my first vows and final vows, and that was absolutely the happiest day. But yes, the clothing was a wonderful experience. It felt very strange, of course. I received the habit in the middle of a heat wave, and I had been wearing sort of sleeveless blouses and light skirts and so on, and here I was suddenly enveloped in this brown serge. And I wondered what had happened to me. But I can remember the very first time I... after having the habit, my bath night came, and so I had my bath, and then I looked at this great pile of clothes, and I thought, surely I don't have to put them all on again, do I? Because we come then to Compline, you know, and so on. But I had, of course. But it doesn't bother me one bit now.
Don't crawl back. And you put it over your head like that. And you pull that down, and the Velcro sits at the back. Only my bit, of course,
That's
Sister Mary Cecilia came from an Anglican background and joined Carmel when she was 22 in 1946. Her work periods are spent folding the newly washed bells and collars in the linen room. She explains why they're worn.
You've got nothing underneath, you see. And also, it's part of the habit in that if you didn't have it, you'd have to have a very elaborate front here, whereas it's very unelaborate, really. And this is just my vest under there.
Sister Mary Cecilia was a driver in the Auxiliary Territorial Service during the Second World War, carrying personnel from site to site and delivering ammunition.
Oh, I drove anything from a small little sort of more or less two-seater to a utility car, and then to lorries, and then ambulance. I took my test on an ambulance in Wales, and I ended up on a three-ton American left-hand drive lorry, which was fun, really, because I used to scoop down. In those days, the roads weren't nearly so good as they are now, but you could go quite a good pace. You were up to 70, you know, which is nothing now, but in those days it was.
Oh, God, head here and touch and see all things created.
Silence is very much part of our vocation, silence and solitude. And the young sisters who come in always find it very difficult not to talk at meals, because it's a social gathering, really. And at times at Christmas and Easter and big feast days, we do talk. We pull all the tables together and we talk. But I think if we did it every day, we would feel a bit drained, because we are called, we have a sort of silence dimension in us. And on our free days, our motivation is to go into silence and solitude and pray.
At 6:45, the nuns meet in the community hall for recreation. For 3/4 of an hour, they can chat among themselves, knit, write letters, and sing. The nuns show their good humour during this brief moment of relaxation. But theirs is a life which shuns luxury and abandonment. Sister Catherine.
The vows, they are a deprivation of a kind. Yes, they are definitely a deprivation. There is a negative side to them. But the positive side is that you're making space for God. So when you do without possessions, you're making more space for God. So I finally, I can sum it up by saying that through the vow of poverty, I choose God as the one treasure of my life. And through the vow of chastity, I choose God as the one love of my heart. And in the vow of obedience, I find him as the one Lord of my being.
Sister Catherine became a nun in 1945 when she was just 19.
I wanted help in so many areas. And I knew I couldn't be in all areas. I didn't know what to choose. And in the end, I thought, well, if I go to give my life to a life of prayer, prayer will reach everywhere. It depends, too, doesn't it, on your belief in the power of prayer. But I do believe that it is an invisible power in today's world.
Wood Hall is run by a prioress who's elected by the other nuns. Every 3 years, they vote in the one amongst them who they think best to lead them. Sister Philomena is entering her second term of office. When that comes to an end, a new prioress must be appointed.
I mean, I suppose in faith, I sort of saw it that it was something God was asking through the sisters. I mean, they probably had certain confidence that I could lead the community.
Is it a difficult job to do?
Well, in this particular community, it's quite an easy ride because we're a very united group and everybody's... They're very supportive and loyal, you know, so I get some... I mean, I wouldn't say it's a very difficult task, but it isn't easy today, I think, to be in any position of leadership, because I think it's like the world outside. Decision-making isn't just made at the top and filtered down. Everybody has to be included now, and that takes a lot of talk and discussion and giving time.
Occasionally, the nuns put on plays. These are for their own private entertainment, and have a maximum of 4 members in the cast to make sure there's an audience of 9 to applaud. Even the prioress has been known to dabble in amateur dramatics.
We did a few adaptations from The Wind in the Willows, and I was Moor, and
The first scene opened where we were having breakfast, you see, and so we thought we'd be authentic and would toast the toast at the fire. We had an open fireplace, you see. And we practiced. We'd had a dress rehearsal. But we hadn't fully dressed up, and I'd got these black, a bit like Damart socks on my hands to make pores, you see. And we started the play, and I toasted the toast at the fire, and then I pulled the toast off the toasting fork, and it stuck to the pores, and I couldn't get it off, and I kept, you know, and the play was in sort of underway, and I was trying to get this piece of toast off my hands, you know, and it eventually was pulled off for me.
At 8 o'clock, it's time for the great silence, and then the nuns return to the chapel for the final office before making their way to their cells for the night. The nuns of Wood Hall have a special serenity in their dedication to God, but their religious life is not without good humour and sensitivity, even during times of great difficulty. Sister Catherine.
Through the darkness, you come to light. And through difficulties, you come to more strength. And above all, in those times of darkness and difficulties, I have become more and more aware of the power of the risen Lord present.
Cry out with joy to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before him singing for joy. Let us come before the Lord in thanks. Know that he, the Lord, is God. He made us who belong to him. We are his people, the sheep of his flock. Let us come before the Lord giving thanks.
A life behind closed doors, an insight into the life of the Carmelite nuns at Woodhall Priory near Wetherby.